Returning from this necessary digression, it must ever be remembered that, although for purposes of analysis and study it is necessary to separate man from the vehicles which he uses, yet the self is one, however varying may be the forms in which it manifests itself. Consciousness is a unit, and the divisions we make in it are either, 1, made for purposes or study, or, 2, illusions due to our perceptive power being limited by the organs through which it works in the lower worlds. The self has three aspects, knowing, willing and energizing. From these arise severally thoughts, desires and actions. Yet the whole self knows, wills and acts. Nor are the functions wholly separated. When he knows, he also acts and wills. When he acts, he also knows and wills. When he wills, he also acts and knows. One function is predominant, and sometimes to such an extent as wholly to veil the others, but even in the intensest concentration of knowing, the most separate of the three, there is always present a latent energizing and a latent willing, discernible as present by careful analysis. A little further explanation may help towards understanding. When the self is still, then is manifested the aspect of knowledge, capable of taking on the likeness of any object presented, as we shall see in detail later on. When the self is concentrated, intent on change of state, then appears the aspect of will. When the self, in presence of any object, puts forth energy to contact that object, then shows forth the aspect of action. It will thus be seen that these three are not separate divisions of the self, not three things joined into one or compounded, but that there is one indivisible whole, manifesting in three ways. From the standpoint of Eastern Yoga, mind is simply the individualized consciousness, the whole of that consciousness, including activities. Yoga describes the process of consciousness thus: 1. Awareness of objects, the aspect of intelligence, the dominant note of the mental plane. 2. Desire to obtain objects, the aspect of desire, the dominant note of the astral plane. 3. Endeavor to attain objects, the aspect of activity, the dominant note of the physical plane. On the buddhic plane, cognition, as pure reason, predominates. Each of these aspects is present all the time, but one predominates at one time, another at another time. Returning now to a more detailed examination of mind, we learn that abstract thinking is a function of the self expressing itself through the higher mental or causal body. Concrete thinking, as previously stated, is performed by the self working in the mental body, the lower mental body, as it is sometimes called. The mechanism of concrete thinking we shall consider in detail presently. It is also in the mental body that memory and imagination begin. The germ of memory lies in tamas, the inertia of matter, which is a tendency to repeat vibrations once started, when acted upon by energy. The mental body is thus the vehicle of the ego, of the real thinker, who himself resides in the causal body. But, while the mental body is intended eventually to be the vehicle of consciousness on the lower mental plane, it also works on and through the astral and physical bodies in all manifestations that are usually called the mind in ordinary waking consciousness. In detail, the process is as follows: the act of concrete thinking sets in vibration the matter of the mental body. This vibration is transferred an octave lower, as it were, to the grosser matter of the thinker's astral body. From that in turn the etheric particles of the brain are affected, and through them finally the denser gray matter of the dense body is brought into action. Thus, before a thought can be translated into active consciousness on the physical brain, all these successive steps must be taken. The sympathetic nervous system is mostly connected with the astral body, while in the cerebrospinal system is, page 17, more under the influence of the ego working through the mental body. The process described above may be elucidated a little further. Every particle in the physical brain has its astral counterpart, and this in turn has its mental counterpart. If then we suppose, for the purposes of our examination, that the whole of the physical brain be spread out so as to be one particle thick, we may further suppose that the corresponding astral and mental matter is also laid out in layers in a similar manner, the astral a little above the physical, the mental a little above the astral. We thus have three layers of matter of differing density, all corresponding one to the other, but not joined in any way except that here and there wires of communication exist between the physical and astral particles, and between the astral and mental particles. That would fairly represent the condition of affairs in the brain of the average man. When, therefore, such a man wishes to send a thought down from the mental to the physical level, the thought, owing to many channels not yet being open, may have to go out of its way, as it were, going laterally through the brain of mental matter until it can find a way down, passing eventually through a tube not at all suited to it, and then, when it reaches the physical level, having to move laterally again in the physical brain before it meets the physical particles which are capable of expressing it. It is obvious that such a method is awkward and clumsy. We thus can understand why it is that some people have no comprehension of mathematics, or no taste for music, art, etc. The reason is that in the part of the brain devoted to that particular faculty or subject, the communications have not yet been opened up. In the adept, the perfected man, every particle has its own wire or tube, and there is also full communication in every part of the brain alike. Hence every thought has its own appropriate channel, through which it can descend directly to the correspondingly appropriate material in the physical brain. If we analyze the process of consciousness, in rough outline, working from the not-self inward to the self, we observe first contact on the physical body from without. This contact is converted by the astral body into sensation, the sensation is transformed by the mental body into a precept, then the precepts are elaborated into concepts, thus preserving the ideal form which is the material for all possibility of future thought. Every contact with the not-self modifies the mental body by rearranging a part of its materials as a picture or image of the external object. Thinking, on the form side, is the establishment of relations between these images. On the life side, it consists of corresponding modifications within the knower himself. The peculiar work of the knower is the establishment of relationships between the images formed in his mental body, the addition which he makes changing the images into thoughts. When the thinker reforms the same images over and over again, the time element, there appear memory and anticipation. The consciousness thus working is further illuminated from above with ideas that are not fabricated from materials supplied by the physical world, but are reflected into it directly from the universal mind, see chapter 28. When a man reasons, he is adding something of his own to the information contributed from outside. As his mind works on the materials supplied to it, it links perceptions together, blending the various streams of sensation onto one, combining them into one image. This work of establishing relations, of synthesizing, is, in fact, the peculiar work of the knower. It is a speciality of the mind. Such activity of the mental body acts on the astral body as said above, and this, again, on the etheric and dense bodies, and the nervous matter of the sense body then vibrates under the impulses sent into it. This action shows itself as electrical discharges, and magnetic currents play between the particles, causing intricate interrelations. These leave what is called a nervous track, a track along which another current can run, say, across it. Hence, if a group of particles that were concerned in a particular vibration should again be made active by the consciousness repeating the same idea, the vibration runs readily along the track already formed, thus reawakening the other group of particles into activity and presenting to the consciousness an associated idea. This, briefly, is the mechanism of associated ideas, the importance of which mental phenomenon is too well known to every student of psychology to need emphasis here. It was indicated above that the peculiar work of the mind is that of establishing relations between objects of consciousness. This phrase covers all the varied processes of the mind. Hence the Hindu speaks of the mind as the sixth sense, because it takes in the sensations that enter through the five senses and combines them into a single precept, making from them one idea. The mind has also been spoken of as the Raja of the senses. Hence, also, the meaning of the sutra, that the vertis, or modes of the mind, are pentads. The word pentad is used in the sense in which the chemist speaks of the valency, or power of forming combinations of an element. For the mind is like a prism which gathers up the five diverse rays of sensation from the organs of sense, the five ways of knowing, the jnanendriyas, and combines them into one ray. If we also take into account the five organs of action, the karmendriyas, as well as the five organs of sense, the jnanendriyas, then the mind becomes the 11th sense. Hence in the Bhagavad Gita speaks of the 10 senses and the 1, 13, 5, referring not to the mind as the 6th or the 11th sense, but to the senses of the mental body itself. We find that they differ very much from the senses of the physical body. The mental body comes into contact with the things of the mental world as it were directly, and over its whole surface, becoming conscious all over itself of everything which is able to impress it at all. There are thus no distinct organs for sight, hearing, touch, taste and smell in the mental body. The word senses is, in fact, a misnomer. It is more accurate to speak of the mental sense. From this it is clear that, being able to communicate directly by thought transference, without having to formulate thoughts in words, the barrier of language no longer exists on the mental plane, as it does on the astral plane if a trained student passes into the mental world and there communicates with another student. His mind, in speaking, speaks at once by color, sound and form, so that complete thought is conveyed as a colored and musical picture, instead of only a fragment of it being shown, as is the case on the physical plane, by the symbols we call words. There are certain ancient books written by great initiates in color language, the language of the gods. The language is known to many chelas, that is, pupils of masters, and is taken, so far as form and color are concerned, from the speech of the mental world, in which, as already said, a single thought gives rise to form, color and sound simultaneously. It is not that the mind thinks in color, a sound, or a form, it thinks a thought, which is a complex vibration in mental matter, and that thought expresses itself in all these ways by the vibrations it sets up in the mental body. Therefore, a man is freed from the limitations of his separate sense organs, and is receptive at every point to every vibration which in the physical world would present itself as separate and different from its fellows. The mental body of the average man today is much less developed, relatively, than the astral and physical bodies. The normal man, at the present stage of evolution, identifies himself with the brain, consciousness, the consciousness working in the cerebrospinal system. Here he feels himself, distinctly and consecutively, as I, only on the physical plane, that is, in the waking state. Except so far as the cerebrospinal system is concerned, however, the consciousness of the average man works from the astral plane, from the realm of sensation. But in the more highly evolved men of the fifth race, the center of consciousness is in the mental body, working from the lower mental world, the man being moved by ideas more than by sensations. Thus the average man is conscious but not self-conscious, on the astral and mental planes. He recognizes astral and mental changes within himself, but does distinguish between those initiated by himself from within, and those caused by impacts from without on his astral and mental vehicles. To him, they are all alike changes within himself. Hence, the physical plane alone is the only real world for him, and all phenomena of consciousness belonging to the astral and mental worlds are what he calls unreal, subjective, imaginary. He regards them as created by his own imagination, and not as results of impacts upon his astral and mental bodies from external worlds. He is, in fact, an infant on the astral and mental planes. Hence, in the undeveloped man, the mental body cannot function separately on the mental plane, as an independent vehicle of consciousness during his earth life. When such a man exercises his mental faculties, these must clothe themselves in astral matter before he can become conscious of their activity. We may tabulate the principal functions of the mental body thus: 1. To serve as the vehicle of the self for the purpose of concrete thinking. 2. To express such concrete thoughts through the physical body, working through the astral body, the etheric brain, and the cerebrospinal system. 3. To develop the powers of memory and imagination. 4. To serve, as evolution proceeds, as a separate vehicle of consciousness on the mental plane. To these, must be added the further function, elucidation of which must perforce be left to a later chapter, viz. 5. to assimilate the results of experience gathered in each earth life and to pass on their essence to the ego, the real man living in his causal body. We may here note that the animal kingdom also employs mental matter to some extent. The higher domestic animals at least undoubtedly exercise the power of reason, although naturally the lines along which their reason can work are few and limited, and the faculty itself is far less powerful than is the case with human beings. In the case of the average animal, only the matter of the lowest subdivision of the mental plane would be employed, but with the highly developed domestic animal the matter of the highest of the four lower levels might be to some degree utilized. Chapter 5 Typical Examples. The mental body of a savage is illustrated in Man Visible and Invisible, Plate VI, opposite p. 87. So far as its colors are the same, the mental body agrees fairly with the astral body in a condition of repose, but it is also much more than this, for in it appears whatever has been developed in the man of spirituality and intellectuality. This might not, in the case of the savage, be much, but it would be of considerable importance later on, as we shall see in due course. Examining such a body in detail, we perceive at the top a dull yellow, which indicates some intellect, though the muddiness of the color shows that it is applied exclusively selfish ends. Devotion, denoted by gray-blue, must be a fetish worship, largely tinged with fear and prompted by considerations of self-interest. Muddy crimson suggests a commencement of affection which must as yet be principally selfish also. A band of dull orange implies pride, but of quite a low order. A large dash of scarlet expresses a strong tendency to anger, which would evidently blaze out upon very slight provocation. A broad band of dirty green, which occupies so great a portion of the body, shows deceit, treachery and avarice, the latter quality being indicated by a brownish tint. At the bottom of the aura there is a sort of deposit of mud color, suggesting general selfishness and the absence of any desirable quality. In an undeveloped mind the mental body contains but a small amount of mental matter, unorganized, and chiefly from the lowest subdivision of the plane. It is played on almost entirely from the lower bodies, being set vibrating by emotional storms from the astral body. Except when stimulated by these astral vibrations, it remains almost quiescent, and even under their impulse is sluggish. No definite activity is generated from within, blows from the outer world being necessary to arouse distinct response. Hence, the more violent the blows, the better for the progress of the man. Riotous pleasure, anger, pain, terror, and other passions, causing whirlwinds in the astral body, stir the mental consciousness, which then adds something of its own to the impressions made on it from without. The ordinary person uses matter of the seventh or lowest mental subplane only, that being very near to the astral plane, all his thoughts are colored by reflections from the astral or emotional world. Very few people can as yet deal with the sixth subplane. Great scientific men certainly use it a good deal, but unfortunately, they often mingle it with the matter of the lowest subplane, and then they become jealous of other people's discoveries and inventions. The matter of the fifth subplane is much more free from the possibility of astral entanglement. The fourth subplane, being next to the causal body, is far away from the possibility of entanglement with astral vibrations. On plate 9, opposite p. 93 of the work quoted, is illustrated the mental body of an ordinary man. In it is seen more in proportion of intellect, yellow, love, rose pink, and devotion, blue. There is also a marked improvement in their quality, the colors being much clearer. Although the amount of pride is high as before, it is now at a higher level, the man being proud of his good qualities instead of merely of his brute force or cruelty. A good deal of scarlet persists, indicating liability to anger. The green is decidedly better, indicating versatility and adaptability rather than deceit or cunning. In the savage the green was lower down the aura, below the scarlet, because the qualities it represented needed for their expression a type of matter coarser than that needed by the scarlet of anger. In the average man the green is above the scarlet in the aura, indicating that the type of matter it needs is less coarse than that required for the scarlet of anger. There has thus been an improvement in the general quality of matter in the mental body. Although there is still a large proportion of the brown of selfishness in the aura, yet the color is a trifle warmer and less grim than in the case of the savage. Thus the mental body of the average man is much increased in size, shows a certain amount of organization, and contains some matter from the sixth, fifth, and fourth subdivisions of the mental plane. As with the physical and astral, so with the mental body, exercise increases, disuse atrophies and finally destroys. Every vibration set up in the mental body causes a change in its constituents, throwing out of it the matter that cannot vibrate sympathetically, and replacing it by suitable materials drawn from the practically illimitable store around. Plate 22, opposite p. 121 in the same book, illustrates the mental body of a developed man. From this pride, orange, anger, scarlet, and selfishness, brown, have completely disappeared. The remaining colors have expanded so as to fill the whole oval, and have also so improved in tone as to give quite a different impression. As all thought of self has vanished from them, they are more refined and delicate. In addition, there has appeared at the top of the aura a pure violet with golden stars, indicating the acquisition of new and greater qualities, to wit, spiritual aspiration. The power from above, which radiates through the causal body of a developed man, acts also through his mental body, though with somewhat less force, allowing for the difference between what we may call the octaves of color, that is, between the hues belonging to the lower and the higher levels of the mental plane. The mental body has now become almost a reproduction of the causal body, just as the astral body is almost a copy, at its own lower level, of the mental body. The mental body of a developed man thus becomes a reflection of the causal, because the man has learned to follow solely the promptings of the higher self, and to guide his reason exclusively by them. The color, in fact, which expresses a certain quality in the causal body, expresses itself not only in the mental body but even in the astral body. The color, however, as already stated, will be less delicate, less luminous and ethereal, as it descends to the lower planes. In a spiritually developed man, all the coarser combinations of mental matter have been eliminated so that it contains only the finer varieties of matter of the four lower mental subdivisions, and of these again the materials of the fourth and fifth sub-planes very much predominate over those of the sixth and seventh sub-planes. The mental body is thus responsive to all the higher workings of the intellect, to the delicate contacts of the higher arts, to the pure thrills of the loftier emotions. Such a body is rapidly becoming ready to reproduce every impulse from the real man in the causal body, the thinker, which is capable of expression in lower mental matter. Both the astral and mental bodies of a spiritual man should exhibit continually four or five splendid emotions, love, devotion, sympathy, and intellectual aspiration among them. The mental body, and also the astral body, of an arhat, one who has taken the fourth great initiation, have very little characteristic color of their own, but are reproductions of the causal body in so far as their lower octaves can express it. They have a lovely shimmering iridescence, a sort of opalescent, mother of pearl effect far beyond either description or pictorial representation. A matter-of-fact person has generally much of yellow in his mental body, and his various bands of color are usually regular and in order. He is far less emotion and less imagination than the intuitional man, and, therefore, often in certain ways less power and enthusiasm, but, on the other hand, he is far less likely to make mistakes, and what he does will generally be well and carefully done. It may be noted also that the scientific and orderly habit of mind has a distinct influence upon the arrangement of the colors in the astral body. They tend to fall into regular bands, and the lines of demarcation between them become more definite. In the mental body of an intuitional man there is much more of blue, but the colors are generally vague and the whole body is ill-regulated. He suffers much more than the steadier type, but sometimes through the suffering he is able to make rapid progress. In the perfect man, of course, both the glow and enthusiasm, and the steadfastness, and regularity, have their place. It is merely a question which is required first. In addition to the qualities enumerated above, which are expressed as colors in the mental body, there are a number of other qualities such as courage, dignity, cheerfulness, truthfulness, and the like, which are represented broadly speaking rather by form than by color. They are indicated by differences in the structure of the mental body, or by changes in its surface. Within the different rings or zones of color described above, there are usually to be seen more or less clearly marked striations, and many qualities of the man can be judged by an examination of these striations. The possession of a strong will, for example, brings the whole mental body into far more level definite lines. All striations and radiations are steady, firm and clearly distinguishable, whereas in the case of a weak and vacillating person this firmness and strength of line would be consequently absent. The lines separating the different qualities would be indeterminate, and the striations would be small, weak and wavy. Courage is shown by firm and very strongly marked lines, especially in the orange band connected with pride, and by the calm, steadfast shining of the colors indicating the higher qualities. When fear overpowers a person, all the colors are dimmed and overwhelmed by a livid gray mist, and the striations are lost in a quivering mass of palpitating jelly, the man having for the time lost the power of guiding and controlling his vehicles. Dignity also expresses itself principally in the same part of the mental body as that expressing courage, but by a calm steadiness and assuredness which is quite different from the lines of courage. Truthfulness and accuracy are portrayed very clearly by regularity in the striations of the part of the mental body devoted to concrete forms, and by the clearness and correctness of the images which appear there. Loyalty shows itself by an intensification both of affection and devotion, and by the constant formation in that part of the ovoid, of figures of the person to whom the loyalty is felt. In many cases of loyalty, affection and devotion, there is made a very strong permanent image of the object of those feelings, and that remains floating in the aura of the thinker, so that, when his thought turns towards the loved or adored one, the force which he pours out strengthens that already existing image, instead of forming a new one, as it would normally do. Joy shows itself in a general brightening and radiancy of both the mental and the astral bodies, as also in a peculiar rippling of the surface of the body. Generally, cheerfulness shows itself in a modified bubbling form of this, and also in a steady serenity which is pleasant to see. Surprise, on the other hand, is shown by a sharp constriction of the mental body accompanied by an increased glow in the bands of affection if the surprise is a pleasant one, and by a change of color usually involving the display of a good deal of brown and gray in the lower part of the ovoid when the surprise is an unpleasant one. This constriction is usually communicated to both the astral and the physical bodies, and often causes singularly unpleasant feelings which affect sometimes the solar plexus, resulting in sinking and sickness, and sometimes the heart center, in which case it brings palpitation or even death, so that a sudden surprise may occasionally kill one who has a weak heart. Or is the same as wonder, except that it is accompanied by a profound change in the devotional part of the mental body, which usually swells out under this influence and has its striations more strongly marked. Mystical thought and the presence of psychic faculties are indicated by colors of which there are no equivalents on the physical plane. When a man uses any part of his mental body, directing his thought strongly into one or more of the channels previously mentioned, the mental body not only vibrates for the time more rapidly, thereby brightening in color, but the portion of it which corresponds to that thought usually swells out temporarily and increases in size, so disturbing for a time the symmetry of the ovoid. In many people such bulging is permanent, and that always means that the amount of thought of that type is steadily increasing. If, for example, a person takes up some scientific study, and therefore suddenly turns his thoughts in that direction much more than before, the first effect will be such protuberance as has been described. But if he keeps the amount of his thoughts on scientific subjects at the same level which he has now adopted, the protruding portion will gradually sink back into the general outline of the ovoid, but the band of its color will have become wider than before. If, however, the man's interest in scientific subjects steadily increases in force, the protrusion will still remain in evidence even though the band has widened. Injury may thus be done to the mental body by over-specialization, leading to a lopsided development. It becomes over-developed in some parts, and proportionately undeveloped in other regions, perhaps equally important. Harmonious and proportionate all-round development is the object to be sought, and for this is needed a calm self-analysis and a definite direction of means to ends. This aspect of our subject we shall consider further in a later chapter. Reference has already been made to the ceaseless motion of the matter in the mental body.